So, just for the benefit of a few new people here tonight, I'm just going to define what this is, and then I'm going to define what we've been doing before this. So, what I'm doing now is giving a talk that is called in Zen a Teisho. It means literally to show forth. So, it's a way of showing forth the Dharma, sort of the heart of the practice. Now, I often will think about something that I want to say, but I usually don't prepare it very much at all. I don't have notes. Much of it is very spontaneous. It's preceded by two periods of sitting, so I'm able to come to a deep center like we all are here, and hopefully emanate from that place what it is that I am hoping to say, and I don't even quite know from moment to moment how it will come out. And that's part of the spontaneity of Teisho. And I think the best Teisho really do come out spontaneously from a deep place. So, what we have been doing tonight, which is called Zazen, is the very core of Buddhism, of what is called Buddhism. That's a name. Zazen is a name. We have to use these names in order to communicate. That's how we communicate. We don't communicate telepathically very often, so we have to use words. And unfortunately, the words become they are symbols. They're symbolic of something that comes before the word. So I hesitate to use the word Buddhism, and I hesitate to use the word Zen, only because I don't want to hem in, corral, the totality of what it is we're doing here. In other words, to make it something that's one thing but not another. So this is something as opposed to another. But just to be more specific, Buddhism arose from this, from what we were doing these past two sittings and what we're doing right now, this attentive mindfulness. Buddhism arose from that. You might even go back a little bit before that. Buddhism arose from suffering. There was a person, this is historical, Shakyamuni Buddha, who was acutely aware of human suffering, acutely aware of it, and felt in the deepest place that there must be some solution to it. There's got to be. So it started with this difficulty. Why is there suffering? Is it possible to liberate myself and others from suffering? Is it possible? I don't even know if it's possible. But in some deep place in me, I already know that it's possible. So this is the essential ingredient to Buddhism, is this, what we call faith, which is, in a sense, the so-called religious side of Buddhism. So if you want to say that there's a religious side to Buddhism, it's this faith piece that the original founder, through what we are doing tonight called Zazen, or deep meditation, deep attentiveness, plunging into the present moment, going way before the thinking mind creates all the dividing lines, all the definitions, all the maps of the world, going back to the original source of all of that, which is one's so-called mind. The faith is that this is the direction to move in order to understand, to get underneath, to heal whatever it is that is suffering. So it starts with this faith. Every single person in this room has this faith on some level, or you wouldn't be here. Every single person in this room has a sensitivity to suffering, seeing it all around us, seeing it in the news, feeling it in our own lives, the pain of it, the alienation of it, the struggle of it. This is what we call the human condition. And without this human condition, there would be absolutely no reason to be here. There would be nobody here. There'd be no practice. But for the human condition, starting from this place of separation, what I sometimes describe as identifying with an entity that seems to be, and I'll put it in quotes, inside, that has characteristics, plunged in the center of a world with its characteristics that's outside of this entity. And that is the fundamental difficulty. It's the fundamental schism, what in Buddhism is called fundamental ignorance, original ignorance. Now, somehow we find this. The Buddha had his teachers. He lived in India, and there were many types of religious practices, and he tried many different things. He tried asceticism, he tried various types of meditation and visualization, etc., etc. And finally, after all of that wasn't going to the very deepest source, he began to do Zazen. And it's said that he practiced in this way, the way we practice, for 6 years, very, very, very hard practice, and then came to a profound understanding, and his suffering was relieved at that point from this understanding. So it starts with this suffering, and there is with this suffering a faith that there is some solution to this, there's some answer to it, there's some reason for it, and I can get there, I can do it within my own body and mind. In other words, this faith is in its most pure form that the world and myself is already whole and complete. It lacks nothing, even though it appears to lack so many things. It actually lacks nothing. It's already whole and complete. This is the very essence of that faith. Now, we don't come to this practice with that faith intact. The faith takes the form of, very often, there's something out there. I don't know what it is, but I know that I'm not there. There's something blocking me. There's something, there's some difficulty. I know it's possible to live more authentically, more connectedly, with less separation. I know it is. It starts there. And then with this practice, it gradually gets more and more refined, more and more pure. So what the Buddha did, he didn't start with Buddhism and then decide to do Zazen and have various teachings and create various concepts and then come to some kind of enlightenment. The Buddha did Zazen. That was the start of it all. That was the core of it, the source of it. Anything that came out, any teaching, any writings, any sutras, books on Zen, teishos, Zen centers, all the trapping, everything else, came out of this, what we're doing now. This Zazen, that was the source of it all. Why? If you and the world are already whole and complete, you don't need to do anything to make it more complete, more whole, more perfect. You need to see it clearly. That is the very act of Zazen. Now, in teaching Zazen to some new folks tonight, I emphasize over and over that this is a very intent, alert state of mind. It is a plunging into the present moment. It is utilizing your body to maintain that alertness of mind. And it's a letting go of all ideas. Now, ideas are there. They have a momentum. They're not going to simply and immediately go away just because we take the Zazen posture and decide that we're going to do what the Buddha did. They have a momentum. But we have a practice, and we stay with that practice. And we avoid getting caught in the thinking, meaning fighting the thinking, analyzing the thinking, struggling with the thinking. We're going back to the source. We're going back to the very space within which this thinking arises. Now, thinking arises. It's like anything else. Thinking is like the lights in the room. It's like the temperature on your skin. It's like the feeling of your knees on the cushion. Thinking is just another phenomenon. It comes and it goes. It's totally dependent on what is called karma, which is simply cause and effect. So things happen because of cause and effect. Nothing's accidental. Nothing's magical. In Buddhism, we don't harbor beliefs, so we don't believe that there's an entity upstairs pulling strings, making us think certain thoughts. People who believe that are psychotic. They think people are putting thoughts in their mind, or the television's talking to them through the wall socket, and all sorts of things. That's called schizophrenia. Now, one form of schizophrenia in the world is this belief in all the, I hate to say it, religious beliefs, and the way that they dominate people's minds, create dividing lines and hatreds and discrimination and prejudice and killing. So we don't move in that direction. So to that degree, what we're doing is actually scientific. It's more observing, finding out what is, not creating an idea of the world and trying to match that idea, not holding on to a complex set of beliefs that we identify with, and then we only feel safe with others that identify with the same set of beliefs and feel threatened by those who don't. That's not part of this. So this is the scientific aspect of what we're doing. So I talked about the religious aspect, which is this faith that there's something more. There's some answer. It's already whole and complete. Why don't I see that? And the scientific side is, I am going to observe things as they are. If this world is already whole and complete, originally, then by observing, I will see that. I don't need to create it in my mind. I don't need to believe in angels and whatever. I don't need to pray to something that will then deliver me into that state. I need to go profoundly into my experience in this moment as it is to clearly see that. That's exactly what the Buddha did. He started with this practice here. He did not start with beliefs. He had to let go of beliefs. He did not start with a teaching. He had to go to the core, the source, from which any teaching can emanate. And that's exactly what we're doing tonight. And this is why I hesitate to give it a name. I hesitate to call it Zazen. I hesitate to call this thing that we're doing Zen or Buddhism. But we have to communicate. So, this teaching of karma, which is very critical to Buddhism, is the finding out through observation that things are not accidental. Everything is connected to everything else. Everything comes from everything else. Everything affects everything else. To that degree, this is a fabric. The world that we can see, hear, feel, touch, think, the observable physical world is part of a fabric of space-time. It's all connected. The seeming divisions are those that we create in order to communicate, to manipulate the world, to get certain tasks done. But when we go profoundly into this observing aspect of our practice, we see that everything happens according to cause and effect. That's just pure science. It's pure mathematics. That means that blame is incorrect. You're missing the fact that everything had to be the way it is right now. It could not have been one iota different. It's the end result of all the causes and effects throughout the entire fabric of space-time. So the notion of blame is like it should have been some other way. But only this person or that person or this circumstance or that circumstance made it not be the way it should have been. And then we suffer because we've created an idea in our mind of how it ought to be. We hold it up as a template to the way things actually are, and there's a dissonance, and it creates a feeling of frustration, feeling that somehow we got the short end of the stick, someone's doing something to us, all the rest of it, which is the human condition, which is one of the sources of suffering, which is exactly what brought us here today. So in a strange sense, it's very benevolent. The fact that there's suffering, that this is a difficulty, that we're missing something, we've misinterpreted our lives, we've harbored certain beliefs that things could have been some other way, that there are entities separated from this fabric that are independent, that then do things that create difficulty and are to be blamed, maybe eliminated. It's very benevolent that this causes suffering because this is what makes someone finally say, I have to find a solution. So it's all part of this fabric. That's what drew the Buddha to this practice. Now the practice is actually quite pure. It's observation. It's, as I said, scientific, but it's more than that. It's not just the scientific method. It is learning to let go of ideas that are not correct through observation, which is exactly the scientific method. Scientific method makes a model of the world and then tries to disprove it, tries to find some more real model, some more accurate model, constantly homing in on what is true. Now, the profound difference here is that we are not making models. We are undermining models. We are observing the world as it actually arises. That's not a model. The lights on the walls here are not a model of lights, they're actual. This is about coming to your actual experience. Now, the other aspect of science that isn't quite like this is that science has in it the belief in a division. I am the scientist, I am the subject observing the object, the objective world. I'm here, the world is out there. Science doesn't go to the division place, the place where there seems to be a line drawn between the subject and the object. Science just doesn't go there. It can, but it doesn't. It looks through microscopes, it looks through telescopes, uses computers, uses mathematics, creates finer and more detailed models that more and more accurately mirror the world so that we can manipulate it and come to certain understandings. But when you push it all the way to the limit, it doesn't go across that line, that dividing line between the scientist and what the scientist is observing. In our Zazen, this is exactly what we do. We gradually bring it all the way to the bottom. If there's an entity inside with characteristics, where is it located? Where's the line between it and the world? Where does that line exist? Where do, in a sense, where do I end and the world begin? Now, ordinarily, people say, well, it ends at my skin, and the world is outside my skin, because I can move my body and I can't move other things, etc., etc. But you wouldn't have a body without the food you just ate, which was grown in soil, which was harvested by people who got there on vehicles, and then delivered it to you in vehicles that needed oil, which had to be mined, which required geologists, which required dinosaurs to die, which required sun and vegetation, and everything that created gravity, created the planets. So basically, everything that you identify with is the product of the entire fabric of space-time. So it's only arbitrary that we draw the dividing line at the edge of our skin. So we say, everything inside is me. Well, my saliva is me, but when I spit it out, it's not me. All of a sudden, it crosses an imaginary line and goes from being me to not me. So this is one of the ways, through this practice, we can use our intelligence to begin to undermine these dividing lines that we create. They're made up, and we can pull the rug out from under them in this way. But in our Zazen, we can also look directly. This entity that I think I am inside with characteristics, let me look directly at it. This thing that I call me, this sensation of me, it's a sensation of me. When I feel that sensation of me, seems to be inside, it's always with me. How can that sensation hear? How is it possible for something that I am aware of to be a knower? It can't. So by looking deep inside, by investigating deep inside, we begin to undermine our identification with sensations, ideas, thoughts, habit patterns, all the things that in Buddhism are called the skandhas, which mean heaps. So these five skandhas of sensation, recognition, meaning thinking, volition, consciousness, etc., etc., all these things that form a concatenation that I identify with and call me, are in essence just heaps of phenomenon that I have over a long period of time identified with and seen as, drawn a line around in my mind, a separate thing from the world. So once again, I'm identifying with an entity inside with characteristics. For example, American, male, Zen Buddhist, doctor, husband, all the rest of it. All the things that get much more subtle. An entity inside with characteristics surrounded by a world that is outside of it. Outside of it. So a very key aspect of this practice is to look deeply inside to undermine these dividing lines. Now, there are two basic ways that we do that in our Zazen. The way that I taught folks tonight and the way that most of us start is by mindfulness practice. So we start with counting the breath. It's one, two, three. Little by little, as our focus is strengthened over a period of time, we're able to make one the whole world. It's not I am saying one, it's one, just one. It's not I am saying two, it's two. One, no meaning, two, no meaning, no separation, just two, just three, just four. Now after 10, 15, 20 minutes of really deep Zazen like this, standing up and walking, just walking, just eating a bowl of cereal, this starts to bleed over into your everyday life, this very simple direct living. When you're just doing something, you're not engaged in the thinking that is adding dividing lines. And then going beyond that, not just adding the dividing lines between me and the activity, but then judging myself as I do the activity, or judging the thing that I'm dealing with, creating notions of good and bad, like and dislike, better and worse, and all the rest of it. All of these things that create the dividing lines in this fabric of space-time that leads to the suffering, sense of lacking, the sense of incompleteness that benevolently brought us here to do this practice. It's all very beautiful. It's a circle. Brings you here to come back to the original place of just. This is the power of mindfulness practice. Now, as the work with the count becomes easier and easier, it's okay to let go of it. Just stay with the actual sensation of breathing. You're getting even closer to just the natural state. Just breathing. Not I am breathing, just breathing, just breathing. And we can move even beyond that. When that just breathing becomes very deep and very refined, we come to a place where we can even let go of holding on to the breathing and let the entire fabric of experience in this moment just be in our intent awareness with no thinking. Thoughts, if we ignore them and don't struggle with them, just start to go away. They quiet down. Now you have an empty mind just in this actual experience. You can't find any dividing lines. You can't find any descriptions for this experience. This is raw. This is actual. To that degree, it's scientific because I'm observing actual. I'm not even beginning to create a hypothesis about my experience. I haven't created a single belief. But why am I doing this? Because I have faith that this is going to the core, the very core of myself. And that feels right. I don't know why it feels right, but it does. So this is that faith aspect. These all come together. You actually don't have to think about it at all. You just have to do the practice. But it helps sometimes, especially when we are learning, we're new to it, we're not sure it really is worthwhile, it's difficult, it's often boring. It helps to put it in this kind of framework so that we can better throw our whole mind and body into it without hesitation. Now the next step is one of inquiry. This is something that many of us here are doing, but the inquiry step is, when my ability to do Zazen is strong enough, the teacher can assign me a question to help focus this inquiry of what is it that I am then? If I am not this entity with characteristics, what am I? It's a way of saying, what is my true nature? Or as there this beautiful koan puts it, what is my original aspect or face before even my parents were born, before I've created even the beginning of an idea about a unique entity inside? What is my actual self? What is my true self, my original face? And this is what's called a koan. And people work on this particular koan in their Zazen in a very deep, profound way. Original. Original face? What's my original self? What is it? Now I will tell you that it is here right now. It is right under our noses. If we can't see it, the only reason is that it's covered up by enthrallment with a phenomenal world that we've named and created ideas about. That's all. It's original. Remember what I said when we started out. We begin with the faith, and the Buddha determined at his moment of awakening, and we all can have the same exact experience, that this world is originally whole and complete. I am originally whole and complete. The Buddha put it this way, he said, above the heavens and below the heavens, throughout the entire fabric of space-time, I am alone. I alone am. I am just this. That was the Buddha's description of this experience. So we utilize these koan to help go underneath all the ideas, all the dividing lines. So this is the breadth of this practice called Zazen. Just so that everybody has an idea of the breadth. It's not just counting the breath. It goes way more deep than that. But the very core of any of it is mindfulness, is observing, is being with what actually is. Letting the thoughts about the world, the models of the world, which is the scientific method, the explanations drop away because we are more interested in the actual experience of the world. As we stay with that actual experience, the thoughts just start to atrophy. They do come in, but they pass through and they don't stick. You see them and play with them a little bit and then you let them go. And you get better and better as you do this practice, not being caught by thinking, not fighting thinking, but just noticing it's there and just sort of letting it slip away, scurry away. So that's an overview of what it is we're doing. And I think we may have a little time right now for a couple questions. So I'll open it up for any kind of question about practice. Yes.
When I'm practicing equanimity today, there was this moment that I was not controlling my breathing. I was just coming and going, just observing it. It felt to me for about like 10 minutes or so, and I wasn't on the ground. The sensation that I was going to die. But I kept...
Say that a little louder. You felt you were going
to... I was observing the yep. breathing. Mm-hmm. And for about 10 minutes, it just the breathing just come and go, and it was just observing it. But it was very shallow, and in that shallowness, it felt very scared because it felt like I was out of breath, but I couldn't control. It was just something observing. My heart started racing. Is that something?
Yes, that's evidence of a deeper focus, concentration. So you're in that state, you're beginning to enter something that, you know, there are different names for these meditative states. Of course, they're unique to each person, and the name is just made up. But there's a name called dhyana, which is a deeper level of focus. Now, what happens when you're doing breath practice? You begin to enter dhyana, is the breath becomes very subtle, almost imperceptible, silent. You may only notice it right at your nostrils. And if you can let go at that point, you can go deeper into this dhyana state. Now, what happens is, we begin to feel the border between breathing and this self that I'm holding on to getting very fuzzy. melting. And the mind, so used to identifying with an entity, can get scared. Now, I can tell you, there's nothing to fear at all. You will not lose yourself. You will not fall down a hole. You will simply go to a more and more intimate place inside. You'll be even more yourself. As you let go of the idea, the border between what you identify as this entity inside and the experience of the breathing, as that border starts to blend and fade and melt, you become even more yourself. You become even more authentic. You cannot possibly lose that. Now, if you allow that, if you go with the flow of it, and it's difficult at first, it may take several passes. Or it's like you're trying to land, and you have to make several. You can't quite get there, and then finally one day you just said, I'm going to land. I'm just going to go with it. Okay? So, don't try to replicate this experience. Just go back to the state of mind within which the experience happened. Once you try to replicate any experience, you're holding it up there as a template and you're going back into the comparison game. This is my template, this is the way it is, they don't match. I gotta force this to become this. And then you're not really doing Zazen. So you come back to just your actual breath and let the breath become very subtle, very gentle, very soft, very silent. And just the other aspect of what you said is critical. You were not controlling your breathing. You were beginning to be breathed. You were letting go of the need to control. The breath is already there. The breath is already, in a sense, involuntary. We can breathe voluntarily, but we don't have to. We can let go and let ourselves be breathed. So as you do that and your attentiveness is very, very incisive and present, moment to moment, takes real attentiveness. This does not come from a sleepy-minded state. And you let yourself be breathed, you start to enter this dhyana. Now as dhyana goes even deeper, I described a state in the book I wrote about that. You can enter into samadhi. And what happens then is that time stops. You're just in this present moment and there's no thinking. There's even no recognition. You only know you're in it when you come out of it and you recognize that time stopped. There's no thought, no sensation. The body drops away, the mind drops away. You are so plunged into this present moment. It's the essence of mind. It's from that place that awakening happens. So it's a very, very positive step in your practice. And you need to be very gentle about it. Don't force it. You can't make yourself enter that state, but it's a sign that you're doing very good Zazen. And it's naturally progressing. And don't congratulate yourself. Don't stand apart from it. Don't analyze it. Don't judge it. Just go back to the space of mind within which that experience arose. That's what I recommend to you. Well, we actually have reached the end of our time, so we'll end there now and we'll do the four vows.